Hey Podnuts, Corey here from Instant House Call. Whether you're a break fix tech who needs to provide remote support on demand without pre-installed software, or a managed service provider who wants to connect to unattended PCs anytime, Instant House Call makes remote support easy. I want to invite you to try Instant House Call free for yourself. Go to podnuts.com and click on the link in the show notes, then use the promo code PODNUTS. Instant House Call is the best remote support on earth. We can prove it. Try it free now and see for yourself.
Welcome to PODNUTS Daily, episode number 418, a show for computer repair techs by computer repair techs. I'm your host, Jeff Hallisch. I'm joined today by Nightwise from Nightwise.com. How you doing, Nightwise?
Hi. Hey, Jeff. Thanks for having me. I'm doing great. I am on one of the greatest podcasts on PodNuts, so
I appreciate that.
Nothing can be better.
We definitely have fun talking to other techs and learning about their day-to-day business and what they do. So if you want, kind of tell us a little bit of a backstory. I'm sure a lot of people already know you and know of your podcast that you do, your audio podcast. You're kind of in this slider realm where you slide between all these different operating systems and pieces of electronic equipment. And
pizzas of electronic equipment. Yeah, that sounds nice.
So, I mean, but it's interesting because you find the things that work for you and you use them not only in your business, but you explain to other people how they can use them on a regular basis so that they're not stuck necessarily in one system.
Correct. I started Nightwise.com about 10 years ago as a blog, and it kind of turned out to become this podcast, this cross-platform podcast where we talk about how to find ways to tune tech into your way of life and let that technology work for you, basically using different operating systems to get things done and using ways between those operating systems to make tech work for you. I hate it's when people are locked into certain platforms, or I hate it when people say, I only want to use that and I can't use anything else. And I always said, the technology should work for you. You should not have to get an extra part-time job to afford that really expensive computer from that really expensive brand because it has a really expensive app that does what you want it to do. There have to be other solutions. You have to be free and cross-platform, be able to slide from OS to OS, pick up a device and do what you want to do. And that's, you know, master your technology instead of, you know, the other way around.
You know, it's funny because that has always been my philosophy. Use what works for you. Don't get locked into a system. There are certain systems I've used for years and I use them because they do continue to work for me. And so I'm not necessarily stuck. I will look at other things. But I do like what I like, and I think everybody should have that choice to be able to pick what they want and what actually works for them on a day-to-day basis.
And that's it. You choose what you want to use. There are, you know, in an industry as ours, especially now with the cloud and everything, vendors are going to try to lock you in to keep you loyal to their brand. And that can either be by giving you premium products that you want to buy, or by just basically locking in your data and your workflows so you can never leave.
Right.
It's kind of like a hotel Comcast-a-fornia.
That's right.
But then on an OS basis. So that's something that I've always found frustrating. And on the other hand, people want to lock themselves in. They feel the unbeloved urge to lock themselves into a certain brand, platform, application, or operating system, and then basically just cuss and swear on everything that is not that operating system,
right?
Up to a religious level. that has always fascinated me, that people say like, only this is good and all the rest is bad. And have you ever tried it? No. So,
right.
I'm not telling you that, you have to jump out of a plane just to see if it works, but, there is the option of giving yourself choice. And even there, people try to lock themselves in. I don't know why, but what I have come across in many years of Nightwise.com is running into fanboys. And I stopped trying to convince them. I, I said, you know, I'm a cross-platform dude. And then they say, yeah, but you have a Mac. Yeah. And you use Final Cut Pro. I said, yeah. Why don't you use that on Windows? I said, because Final Cut Pro really works for me. And I give myself the freedom of choice. And if I want to do something else on Linux or on Windows or on Android or on Chrome, I just do it. Whatever works for me. I've come down to a workflow where I can pick up whatever device I want and have my personal and professional workflows tuned to be able to be accessible out of any device. And that has given me great flexibility.
Yeah. And it's funny you say that because I often think of things. I would love an operating system or a whole system that I could basically go into and be in that one system. But what I've found over time is my system, there are certain things I don't like about it. And so I'll move over to another system, and then I've got to make sure that these two systems will work together. And when I do that, I find the best of different worlds, and they kind of mesh together, and that's, you know, that's kind of where I hang.
This is very philosophical, but let me just be the oracle from the Matrix that says it's you know, there is no spoon, there is no system,
right.
there is no operating system. You are the operating system and you use devices. And on these devices, there is software. And on this software, there are applications. And in these applications, there is data.
Right.
But you are the operating system and you choose what you want to work with. And you never start out with an OS and take it from there.
No, right.
You start out with what you want to do.
That's, you know what, that, philosophical or not, that is a great way to look at it. Something I wouldn't have thought of myself. But obviously, you've spent a lot of time talking to different people in different worlds. And basically, you've come to this conclusion that, you know what? You're right. We are the operating system. We're operating the stuff, and we just got to get it to work for us. So that's great. Now, you've got a great podcast. You talk about these things, and you've been able to bring it into your business workflow. Now, you started doing some IT consulting over the last, what did you say, about a year or so?
Yeah. I've been in IT for about 20 years. I started out in the mom and pop computer shop. I did network administration. I did system engineering. Boots on the ground. I did help desk, and I went towards service demand management and architecture. But I've always had my little business on the side where I would work with clients and, you know, do their IT just to keep in touch with everything, and because I love to do it.
Right.
And in April of last year, I decided to become self-employed, and I started up my own company.
Now, what made you come to that conclusion that you wanted to be fully self-employed instead of doing all the other things that you had done prior to that?
Oh, that's a really good one. that's a bang on personal question, because I come from, and this is going to be one of those podcasts where I'm going to show you more of my bat cave than I've ever shown people before. this is kind of an outing for me. I come from 100 years of self-employed entrepreneurs.
Okay.
From three to four generations. I always worked for the man, and I was very happy working for the man. And I thought, like, no, self-employed, you know, I've seen businesses and I've seen how tough it is. And I've, you know, seen it go wrong and I've seen it go right from time to time. And I was kind of scared. We went to our accountant last year in January to get some figures on possibly looking into a little online store for my wife. So we ran through the numbers and stuff like that, and we were about to leave, and my bookkeeper stops me at the door. Our accountant stops me at the door and he says, "Hey dude, what about you?" And we're like, "What about me?"
Okay.
"When are you going to take the plunge?" He's like, "Me? Yeah, you. Me? Self-employed? Are you kidding? That's dangerous." And he said, like, "Do you know what you can make?" I said, like, "No. Okay, let's sit down and do the numbers." And the numbers were interesting.
Okay.
But that wasn't the main thing. So basically what I did then, I went online and I looked for freelance gigs that I could do. I looked around and suddenly somebody called me and they wanted to talk to me, and they introduced me to their client, and their client said, "Sure, we'll hire you for a year full time." And I remember saying, okay, I'll be back in 6 weeks. I have to quit my job, start my company, think of a name, and then I'll be back. And that's how it happened. So I really, I started backwards to forwards. I signed a contract with a client and I then quit my job and started up a company.
Okay. Wow. That's how,
yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, you learn to fly the hard way.
Right.
You know, by some unprovoked encounters with gravity or solid objects or both. But I'm very happy the day I started, and especially when I got the liberty of forming the identity of the company. And doing other things, you know, really starting to work on what I really wanted to work on. I started to know that this is what I was born to do. So I really enjoy it. But it's really rock and roll. It's a backwards kind of company, which is, you know, it's fun. I had the right people to work with. I had a listener of Nightwise.com helped me with the branding. I've gotten gigs through Nightwise.com. So it's really, really weird to see how it cross-pollinates. But I wanted to go out on my own because I had something in me that wanted to help companies and clients work with technology and give them my advice. And I was in one company. I had a lot of possibilities, but you know, there's more out there. So I decided to take the plunge.
Now would you say that after being in this for almost a year's time that you're happier now than you were working for the man?
There are times, you know, the first time you go through your paperwork and your finances.
Right.
It's like, what? Wait a minute, what? That's my money. No, it's not your money. Okay, it's not my money. But once you're used to that. Of course, there have been moments where I said, man, if I just, you know, stayed working for the man, I wouldn't have had this or that.
Right.
But on the other hand, there are days that, you know, I drive toward a client or a prospect and I come through the door and I put down my business card and we strike up this wonderful conversation and we leave with either an impression or an idea or a corporation that none of us, that neither me nor the client ever thought about. And then I go home and I think, well, man, this is the greatest stuff in the world because I can really do my thing.
Right.
I have to pay the bills and it takes a lot of energy, but it's a very creative process. So yeah, I belong here. I know that. Gotcha. I know that now. It's not always fun, but this is where 100 years of self-employed, I think my grandfather and my grandmother and my father are looking over my shoulders going like, finally, he's almost 40, finally got there. Jesus.
Well, sometimes it takes us a little longer to get to that point. But I think a lot of times, I think if you have the entrepreneurial spirit, you're definitely drawn to that. And it's really hard to keep that at bay and just sit there and work a day in, day out job. I know I kind of go through those same things. So I'm always looking for the opportunity to go, okay, at some point I'm going to have to make a break and go into business for myself. And I know that for the most part, I think I'll be happier. Now, would you say that are you working harder or not as hard as you were? Or is it harder than what you were doing in your day-to-day job before that?
I'm working harder, but it isn't as stressful.
Okay.
The one thing that I learned is when you work for a boss, and don't get me wrong, I've had great employers, but especially when you work in bigger companies and there are things like office politics and stuff, sometimes your self-worth is determined by the job that you do. And right. The day that you can set that aside and say that I am now working for myself, I declare the master of my own image and of the way I see myself and the way how I feel, that is very, very liberating.
Okay.
Because there is a lot of office and HR politics that are psychologically geared towards keeping you in a certain place. And when you study psychology, I'm an educator by training. I studied psychology and you start to see those structures, which are not always, you know, on purpose, they sometimes just are. And when you start to notice those things and you really can't handle it anymore, you go like, okay, I know I can see the game. I can see the code right here. I mean, you're trying to let me do this or make me feel that way while actually it's not true. So letting go of that, I work harder. I do. I work a lot more hours, but it's not work. It's my right. company.
I think that's a good distinction, is that you've separated the, yes, it's work, but you also said that it's less stressful. And even though you're working harder, it's work you enjoy. So really, the reality is it's not really as hard as maybe with the stress that was added on at your previous jobs.
True. You still have stress and it is sometimes stressful, but you're working for you.
Right.
And it comes with the risks, but it also comes with the benefits. And perhaps you don't have a paycheck that is as fat as the one that you had before. But on the other hand, you know, it's like having a professionally going towards a cabin in the woods and living there. I think it's that.
Okay.
You know, sometimes people say, I just want to pack stuff up and go to the cabins in the wood. Well, going to work for yourself is a cabin in the wood. You go away from all the stress. A bear can eat you, but you know, it's your cabin in the woods and it's basically your bear. So
now,
yeah.
Now you can see, I mean, obviously I think one of the things as we get into businesses sometimes and we start working for ourselves is we're definitely going to see that. I mean, obviously we wouldn't get into business if we didn't think it was going to grow and going to be able to produce either the same type of income that we had left previously or even produce more income. And I'm going to be inclined to say in today's day and age, wherever you're at in the world, working for yourself eventually is always going to produce more, you know, more, what's the word I'm looking for? It's always going to produce more. I think you can produce more money in time for yourself than you could have ever in a job.
Yeah and no. I mean, okay. every business says we're going to grow, we're going to make more. And it is a fact that this doesn't happen. I mean, not all companies grow and succeed because otherwise, you know, by now we would have millions of multinationals who are gigantic. And they're not, because some companies go away. Sony Ericsson never thought that Ericsson was going to go away.
Right.
And Ericsson themselves said, like, we're going to grow and grow and grow. Nobody expects to grow smaller. I read a wonderful book by Ricardo Semler, which is a book that I would highly recommend. Let me just glimpse the title here. Maverick by Ricardo Semler. Great business guru, but a very, very down-to-earth guy. And he says, like, you know, everybody wants to grow, but not everybody is going to grow. So think about what you want to grow with. For me, I want to make more money. Yeah. Does my company have to have 5,000 people? I don't know. I don't want to grow in that way. Perhaps I just want to be happier. I just want to go on a stage someday and do a talk like I saw this Ricardo Semler guy do and have people, you know, listen to what I say and take value from it. And when I go away, kind of change what they're thinking or the way they think about technology or the way they think about their lives. If I can grow like that, that's growing for me.
Right.
So it doesn't always have to be financial growth. I talked to the CEO of one of Belgium's bigger tech companies. And he said, like, yeah, I said, my initial goal is I was going to double my workforce every year. He said, it's a good thing that didn't happen. I'm doing this for 40 years. If that went well, half of Europe would be working for me.
Right.
I was right. So at some point, I mean, of course you have to grow and you have to expand your horizons, but that doesn't always mean that you have to become, you know, that can mean more staff, or that can mean more money, or that can mean that you go into a different brand, or you can grow the quality of your life. And if that is, I'm growing from a $2,000 check a month to a $2,500 check a month. Okay, that's good. That's growth. But it can also be, I grow from working 5 days a week to working 4 days a week and spending more time with my kids. That's right. Growing too.
Yes, absolutely. No, I think you've hit every nail on the head that I think a lot of people think about when they're going into businesses. It's not necessarily, like you said, it's not all about money. Sometimes it is about just being, having that freedom to do the things that you want to do.
There are things that money cannot buy. There are days that I go do prospecting. You know, I just look for new clients and do meetings and stuff. I'm a consultant. I don't make money that day.
Right.
But I have the opportunity to make more money, and I have to do this. But there are times when I stop myself and I think that, look at me, I'm here, I'm wearing a suit, I'm in this diner waiting for an appointment with a client, drinking coffee and working on my laptop, and it's my own thing.
Right.
That is value right there. And there's nobody that's going to say what I have to do.
Right.
And there's nobody that gets to say that, you know, this is the company policy. I dictate company policy. This morning, company policy world was wearing two different socks. So I did. That is company policy for today, two different socks. And tomorrow, that company policy is going to be altered. And having that flexibility is great.
That's great. A lot of great info here. Now, so going back to your IT consulting business, and mm-hmm. I know you've talked about it in your podcast where you've talked about how the different, you know, pieces of equipment or operating systems and things that you use in mm-hmm. your business to cross-platform. But what are some of the tips and tricks in things that you're doing in your business nowadays that might help somebody that wants to take this same step and go out there and, you know, work in these different companies and figure out how to do some of this stuff for themselves?
Are you talking about how to set up their own infrastructure or in general just, you know, how to get started?
Well, basically, maybe how to get started in some of the things that you're using today to help you to get those clients to the point where they need to be as far as their IT infrastructure.
Okay. Rule number one, the best way to sell is not to sell.
Good
that
point.
Is, yeah, that's for, I know we're Belgians. When it comes to capitalism, we're basically Buddhists compared to the American way of life. I understand. So let me just, you know, ring my gong here and say, but that is one of the rules that I have learned. When you go into a client as a technical advisor, let's call us technical advisors, you know, we are basically, and I said this when I worked with small companies, I said this when I came into people's homes, into small businesses, and also with big companies, we're doctors. We come in, we have a trade that is completely mystical to the other ones, to the other party. Thus, we have a responsibility to do right.
Right.
And to gain their trust. And you can gain their trust by listening to what they're doing, to understand what they do. And once you understand what they do, you understand what they need. And understanding what they need is so much powerful than knowing what they want. And once you have that, this is basically the most philosophical episode of Podnuts Daily ever. But with understanding what they need is much more powerful than knowing what they want. A sales guy comes in, he has something he wants to sell. He sees a void of knowledge with the client. He fills that void of knowledge with a urge to purchase something, with a need, either true or false, and he sells his predetermined product. When you are a person of trust, you know what the client does. You know what the client needs. You know what the client wants. But because you are a person of trust, you will get a far more broader field of play to place down your advice and your suggestions because you're helping the customer do what he needs to do, not what buy what you want to sell him. And once you are looking, standing shoulder by shoulder with this customer, looking at what he is doing and where he is going, you can, you know, you don't have to sell him anything. He will say, bring me that. How can I do that? It's not you'll have to negotiate prices, but it will be completely different because you're not there in a process of trying to sell them something, but either of a process of thinking along their lines of their vision. And that is something that is far more powerful, but you will have to have that position of trust and you can never betray it.
Right. I think it comes down to the bottom line is I think we all get into this business to basically help people. And whether that's help people in, you know, residential or help people in their businesses, but we want to help them and make it beneficial. I think the people that get in this business that just want to make a dollar bill, I don't know that they, not saying that some of them, you know, do last, but most of them, I would say, don't last because you just can't run your business that way for long periods of time.
A fool and his money must be parted. There are a lot of people that do. I talked to a small business here. They sell bathrooms and central heaters and stuff. Small company, I think, three people in the store, a couple of people on the road. And she came up to me. I did a lecture on websites, and she comes up to me and she says, "Well, can I ask you a question, sir?" I said, "Yes, you can." "Well, our accountant says that we're kind of overpaying our webmaster." I said, "Okay, what do you pay? What does your webmaster do?" "Well, we have a website and he does our printing. And it takes a long time because he just does it on the side. And, you know, we're not really happy anymore. And our accountant says we pay too much." I said, "Okay." So I take a look at the website, which is a basic Drupal website with a basic theme.
Okay.
And I take a look at the graphic work, because he was also a graphic designer. It was okay.
Okay.
Then I said, "Do you have the originals of your graphics?" She said, "No, he has them. He chooses the press shop that prints everything. He does everything. We can just order." I said, "So you don't own any of this graphical material of your own logos?" It's just no. Then I take a look at the website. The domain name is registered to the guy who does the website, not to the company.
Okay.
I said, "What do you pay?" And she says, "We pay 35,000 euros a year."
Wow.
Now, Belgian taxes say that if you do something on the side, 50% of your profits go to the taxes. Okay. That leaves roughly 17,500 euros. Which means that is a wager, a month's wager every month right there on the side, doing a website and some graphic work.
Wow.
Yes. I was stunned.
Well, and I'm stunned at the 50%. So I guess I should stop crying about my 15% self-employment tax.
Belgium is when you already have a job and you make you have a job on the side, 50% of your profits go back to the taxes.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah. We have a lot of governments. We have like 10 million people that live here, like in New York, and we have five governments. So,
wow. Okay. Yeah, so basically this guy was really, I mean, once everything's set up, he's not really doing a whole lot.
And there you go.
You know,
and then he was taking advantage of it.
Right.
The one thing that those things take me off. But one of the things that I always tell my clients that I work with is that basically a technology guy knows nothing about technology, because technology, a technological solution, is comprised of the needs of the client, the process of the client, the situation of the client, and the goal of the client. And then there's this tiny, tiny piece that's the tech that makes it work. I said, the last piece, the tech that makes it work, that's something he knows about. But all the rest is something that you will have to bring to the table. And you can't, because you don't know that you need an Oracle SQL database, an Oracle database with so many cores and stuff like that. You will have to have a technological partner that will ask you the right questions and will literally not listen to, "I need a website." No, that's what you need. That's what you want, but he will go like, "Okay, what kind of business do you have? What do you want to sell? What this, what that?" That is what you need. And that is an incredible difference. You can sell a client what he wants, no problem. And if you're smart, you can ask a lot of money, but that's not always what he needs.
Right.
And to be sure to know what the client needs, you will need to understand what your client does. Yep. I worked for the biggest container shipping port in Antwerp. I was a service manager, so I had to make sure that the IT services that were sold by my company were delivered. Well, you know, basically, I was, I called myself the double-sided poop screen. Internally, they went like, your client this, and the client went, your guys this. So I came to this owner of this large terminal. He had the contract on the table, and he was pointing at the contract. He says, contract says this. And I said, tell me what you do. So what do you mean? What do I do? So tell me what you do. We have the biggest container port in Antwerp. I said, how does it work?
What do you mean?
I said, how does it work? How does a container get to the boat and get to China? So he shows me. It was very, it's a really grand tour to get. But because he showed me during every process, I asked, what system do you use for that? Oh, we do that. And by the end of the tour, I knew exactly which systems were doing what in his company and which systems were important, where he needed to invest and where he could downscale. And that was a completely different conversation I had with him because, after that, everything that I said was good because I understood him and he trusted me. And that's a relation of trust that cannot be bought with a good quote. Then quotes don't matter anymore. You just say, what do you need? And don't go overboard. But that's basically it. Trust is so imperative.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It's like being in any relationship. You have to find out, what does the other party need and how can you help them? Those are the two basic things that you've got to be a good listener. And so you're right. As far as techs go, that's not necessarily a tech
skill,
right? So something you definitely have to develop, when you're going into those businesses.
Let me put it this way, people. It's not because somebody invented a light bulb that we decided to build a house around it. We had a house. It was dark and we put in the light bulb. That is the same thing with technology in companies. It's not because there's a new version of Windows that this company is going to say, well, I'll just have to, invest because there's something new out. That's great. That works, but it doesn't, keep on working. If you have technology that can really make a difference, you don't have to trigger that corporation to invest in that technology. They know it's good for them.
Right.
You don't go diving and you say like, yeah, I don't need this oxygen thing. It's the new oxygen. I don't need that. If you can't breathe, you'll take any bottle. So
true.
And the one thing you shouldn't remember, I keep going back to the doctor. There's this joke where the patient comes with the doctor patient and doctor says to the patient, you have Alzheimer's. That'll be $50. And you have Alzheimer, and that'll be $50. And by the way, you have Alzheimer, that'll be $50. If that's the way you're going to approach your clients by charging service hours or so-called, I'm making big air quote, maintenance and stuff like that, that is not going to be the basis for a prolonged relationship. You'll be able to charge the client $50 and tell him he has Alzheimer over and over again, but you won't be able to tell him, by the way, this is $50, you have Alzheimer, and by the way, your hair's falling out. Because that's something he doesn't want to know anymore. It's just added problems.
Right, right. No, that's good. That definitely is a good basis. So you go into these companies, you get this relationship set up, mm-hmm. You serve the company to help them with whatever they're doing, whether it's building widgets or servicing somebody, some other industry or whatever. So when it comes to that, what are some of the things that you're doing in your day-to-day business as far as setting them up? I mean, are you doing servers? Are you doing, any type of managed services, which a lot of people talk about today? You don't have to go through all of them, but just pick one that's kind of an interesting way that you would set up a regular company for their specific needs.
Let's say we've got a small company X, which asks me, can you come down and take a look at what we're doing? Either X doesn't have any technology, which kind of happens sometimes. They are just very basic.
Okay.
Or company X has an IT partner and they are basically in a divorce and I have to mediate. Or company X actually has two brain cells and decides to, you know, get in an external contractor to take a look at the quote and help them design anything before they go shopping.
Okay.
So basically what happens is I go up there and the first question is, of course, what do you do? We talk about what they do. They show me their business processes. They show me what technology that they have. I listen to them, not only what they have right now, if they have any issues. And then I don't go like, yeah, that server is kind of slow. I don't listen to that. What I hear is our processes are faster than the hardware that we have. So I went like, okay, that's an issue. You know, we have a printer. It's very slow and our truck has to wait. So I don't hear the printer is slow. I hear that the outflow of material is faster than the IT infrastructure can cope with.
Gotcha. Okay.
So trying to I don't know. I asked them, you know, what do you do? What did you do? What's going wrong? And where are you going to do? What are you going to do next year? And that's always an interesting one because sometimes I come up with suggestions for innovations that they haven't thought of yet. Because I know the technology and I start to understand their business processes. So I went like, so have you ever thought of doing this and this? And then I get the googly eyes and I know I got it. Oh, this is going to be fun. They're the googly eyes. I get those. Googly eyes are like, whoa. And then I have to explain myself, but I love the googly eyes smile. And then you just see, you know, the little dollar signs going ding, 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 ding behind their eyes. And you know that, look, my suggestion has already made a difference.
Right.
So then we're going to start drawing. What do they do? What kind of technology do they need? And I continually bounce it against is, you know, this is going to work like that. And this is going to work like that. Is this process something you want? So you hear me that I'm constantly asking them what they do, how they do it, how do they work? I don't come in with, this is SQL 2005 and you better, you know, it has 50 licenses. You have 56 employees. So it's time to fire some people. You know, it doesn't work like that.
Right.
So I tune technology onto their business processes. And this can be very, very simple. It sounds very, a good example. I do small businesses from time to time because I love doing them. A lingerie store nearby sells lingerie.
Okay.
Sells lingerie. Has a web shop. Says, yeah, web shop sucks. I mean, too much work. And I say like, okay, what do you have? Oh, a web shop. Okay. What do you do? Well, I sell lingerie. I say, okay. What's your trait? Well, we have customer intimacy. Why in hell's bells do you want to sell stuff online? Well, because it's a new thing. Ah, that's where you're wrong. Because what are the issues that you have? Well, stuff doesn't fit. They have to send it back. I said, okay. And you know, that takes a lot of time and we have to refund the people and stuff like that. It's all a lot of hassle and we don't make a lot of money. So we talked about this technological solution that didn't fit what they were doing. Their trait of business was incompatible with a web shop like everybody else has a web shop. So we adapted their web shop that people could select and display things, but they could only order them if they have been to the store once for a good fitting. So geared the web shop towards getting more people to the store instead of keeping them away from the store. And this was philosophically a completely different approach at what a standard web shop's like. But they love it. They don't ship. They hardly ship anything. But they use their web store as a kind of 24/7 window shopping thing. And they have this little social community of people, you know, telling each other what they bought and kind of, you know, getting each other to the store and stuff like that. It's really small, but it helps. And that is the round peg square hole approach that most webmasters have. You know, I'll sell you a store because it's the new thing. But what that client specifically needed was different.
Right, because they're not like an Amazon where, you know, Amazon eats the shipping costs, you know, back and forth when you order clothing. Because let's face it, even in today's day and age, it is hard to order any type of clothing online and have it fit right the first time.
Try being a European guy weighing 130 pounds and ordering a medium-sized t-shirt at Amazon US. I always say there's room for one more in this t-shirt.
Yeah, right. Wow. Yeah, it when it in every manufacturer is slightly different. So yeah, I think that's good that, you know, you basically went in, found out what their needs were, and their need was they needed a good sizing on people coming in the shop. So when they ordered something online, it was they already knew what size they were.
And that's also, you know, that was their demand. And then we started building this web shop process. And we had the whole process marked out. And we hadn't talked tech at all. And then I started asking, so where do you want people to access this website? From their browser so they can shop? Or is it something that they quickly want to check online on their phone? So you have to make it responsive. And, you know, when I have all of this, what do you want / what do you need and what will you expect? Because that's really important to tell your client what he can expect in the budget. This is what you can expect. And only then I turn around and I do this with big companies. It's kind of my catchphrase. I do this with small clients. When I got the demand and the need and the process is mapped, I say, okay, now get me some nerds. And then I call the techs in. For larger companies, that means I take the IT partner that they already have and I get their geeks and I put them in a room and I bring in burgers and Coke and I speak geek to them because I know what they say and how they speak.
Right.
And the first nerd that talks to me and says, you can't do that, that is the one that earns my trust. And all the other guys are just sales guys with propeller heads. Basically, because I trick him. I go like, yeah, can I do that? Yes. Can I do that? Yes. You know, and you've got, you know, I want to run it on a Mac too. Yeah, sure. And then I want to add in an ActiveX module. Does that work? Yeah, sure. I say, okay, you're out. You're a sales guy. You just promised me something that I know cannot happen.
Right.
I don't trust you anymore. Because the geek that was sitting next to him that the sales guy said, you shut your mouth while I'm talking, he already went like, that doesn't work.
Right.
So that's how I kind of find the guys that I need to work with. And then I just basically say, get me the nerds. And I translate my design coming from the needs and the demands and the expectations of the client into technology. And then it doesn't matter anymore what tech I use, as long as it meets the client's demand. So never come in with, I'm a Microsoft house and we only do Microsoft products. Or a lot of partners, guys, I love you to death. Say like, you know, we're an open source guy, you know, we're an open source house and we try to use only open source product. No, you don't. You use whatever product the client needs, not what your, I don't know, semi-religious belief is. I know that you pray to the great Richard Stallman every night in his little great Richard Stallman shrine and you kiss his sandals and whatever crap that comes between his toes. Sure. But when the client says, I want ActiveX or worse, I need ActiveX, you give the client ActiveX because that is what he needs. So that is something your personal beliefs, you have to let your fanboyism go. There's not always room for it.
I think it's funny. There's if you really, you know, you look at, you know, even the Linux community and stuff, I think a lot more of them work on Windows, you know, for regular day jobs or what they do in their businesses than, you know, I mean, that's kind of where the rubber meets the road for a lot of businesses anymore. And, you know, again, I think it comes back to what you said is you have to pick the things that are going to work for you, whether it be something in Windows, whether it be something, you know, something open source, whether it be something in, dare I say, Apple, you know, things like
that. Yeah. Sometimes geeks, open source geeks, either about Apple or about, you know, anybody who's invested in some kind of brand, you know, and they use this other thing. What's wrong? What's wrong with that? Okay, this is again what I want and what I need.
Right.
What I wanted was a great computer with fantastic hardware that doesn't make me stand out when I'm in the hipster's coffee house. So you buy a Mac. What you need is I really, really want to run Office and Paint and Minesweeper. So you install Windows. And what you have a solution that works for you.
Yes.
There you go.
Now, yeah, these are definitely good points. So now, So you're setting the, you're giving the businesses and things what they want. Now, from that standpoint there, I mean, are you using, now let me ask you this. Are you doing any type of work as far as the technical end of it, as far as break fix? Are you just, are you going in setting up the infrastructure with every one of these companies? I would imagine with all the stuff you talk about that you are into the technology just as much, but your business is just slightly different than that.
I do not touch the technology. I leave that to the experts. One of the things that are very, that I tell my clients are very important is that, look, I'm a consultant and I work at my consulting client for 8 hours a day. On the side, I also have other consultancy gigs that I do. I cannot do system management. I cannot do support for you, because when you call me and I'm invested in another customer, I cannot pick up. Thus, I cannot give you what you need. Although I can make a fair share of installing a Windows system here, I will not touch the systems at all, because I will not be able to support them in a way that I'm supposed to support them. And I want to sleep at night, and I want things that are called weekends, because I did system support for the longest time. And whenever there was, like, you know, a day off in between a Thursday and a weekend, or it was a little bit rainy and everybody had time to tinker, my weekends were gone. And I've been there, I've done that, and I'm over that. So one of the things that I've had to learn myself, teach myself, is to stop implementing. Don't implement. I will help my clients find the right nerds. I will drill said nerds, so said nerds will give my client exactly what they want. I will drill my client to have realistic expectations and understand that said nerds and said nerds technology is not magic and unicorn poop.
Right.
So, you know, what they pay for is what they get. So if they want to, you know, nibble on the money, they will be they will nibble on what they get. And I don't put myself in the middle as promising things that will not be able, that I won't be able to deliver. So I don't put myself in a situation where I, you know, kind of meddle with the expectations of the client or with the budget. That's something I don't do. I said, this is what you pay, this is what you get. I'm only here as the middleman. So I help them find the right nerds. I draw up a plan. And if the client wants me to, I will guide the nerds through the project. And I say nerds in a very, very wrong way. I mean, nerds, geeks, techs like me. I have the original series tricorder right on my nightstand. So I'm as nerd as they get. You know, these are my people. The techs are my people. I just have learned to talk to these other aliens called clients. And I will intermediate, and I will, if the client wants me to, I'll kind of guide them through the project as a kind of a project manager. And once it's done, I will check with the client, is this what you want / what you need? And then when the nerds are going out and say, like, goodbye, I just grab them by the collar and I say, like, okay, we're going to sit down and we're going to make sure that there's documentation and that the technology that has been installed has been properly communicated and translated to the customer so he understands it. And by the way, if you want to draw up a support contract, I'll look over that support contract too if the client wants me to, so to make sure that he gets what he needs. So that's kind of what I do.
That's great. And I think what you've found is obviously something you're good at, even though you're good at the other stuff. You found a niche that you can come in and, you know, take these businesses from either no technology, you know, not so good technology, to, you know, great technology and the right people in place to support it. Because I think a lot of us, a lot of times, will go, we have to wear all hats in our business. We have to do everything. And I think a lot of times that is a wrong approach on our parts, because bottom line is, we're not good at everything.
Dear technical brethren and sistern, open up your shirt, you know, just the bottom middle buttons.
I have no ass on my chest.
You have, indeed, you have no ass on, you might have hair on your chest. If you are the female kind and you have hair on your chest, you probably need to see a doctor, but hey, no, you can't, and don't. You know, oh, I can do websites for you as well. I can do this for you as well. No, you can do them all half-assed.
Right.
And the only thing that you will do is not meet the client's expectation. You're clouding the client's expectations because you're the expert, the technical expert, which for the client means you're the technical expert in everything that has more than two buttons and does not require washing powder. And they will see your expertise into the bazaar while you're just really good at Minesweeper and just do a little bit of the rest. That's okay. You still have a life. But I tell it too. I mean, they go like, you know, do you know something about that? I say, yeah, I know something about that. And that, something about that. And that, something about that. Well, you're not really deep into anything, are you? I said, no, that's my gig. I'm broad. And by the way, I'm halfway a psychologist and halfway a tech. So I can actually talk to clients and diagnose exactly. mental illnesses if they need it. So that is my selling point. My selling point when I go to consultancy companies that hire me out is, look, I'm broad. One of my clients called me a red monkey a couple of weeks ago, which I asked him to explain. He said, like, you know,
what is that?
Red monkeys, you know, you're a monkey town and all the greens in the middle and all the green monkeys are in the middle. And outside of monkey town, everything's red. And there are monkeys that live on the side and they have 1 foot in the red zone and 1 foot in the green zone. And we call them the red monkeys because the red monkeys know how to survive in the red zone and in the green zone. They're not really green monkeys and they're not really red monkeys, but their niche is that they can survive in both areas.
Oh, that's good. That's really
so,
good.
Yeah. So I already picked my company name. Otherwise, we'd be called Red Monkeys.
That's awesome. Well, I think a lot of times, you know, I've had people, you know, doing businesses and stuff before. I've had people ask me, hey, do you know how to do this program? I'm like, that program was written by some dude and it's proprietary to exactly what you guys do. No, I don't know. Well, our last IT guy, listen, here's what we're going to do. You're going to pay for support from this gentleman who put this code and stuff for you together. And then what we're going to do is if we have a problem, I will call him and we will figure the problem out and go from there. But I said, you can't expect me to know each and every system that you have in place. You know, maybe you can be niche in some and you can learn some, and maybe that's what you sell your services on, but you're not going to know all of them.
No. Yeah. You can oversell yourself. That's easy. But speaking of the tech that doesn't, you know, work there anymore, I've come to companies, you know, what's this? This is application X. Okay. We have to migrate application X. Okay. Who did application X? That person doesn't work here anymore. Okay. What's the name of person X? Well, the name of person X is X. Incredible. So I looked up person X. Person X was dead. I called his wife. He died 3 years ago.
Ugh.
Now what?
Right.
Do you have a support contract? Are you kidding? Said, okay, then get a shovel. Because we'll need to get person X or whatever's left of him to do the migration. That is one of the things that's the second selling point. The first selling point is, and I'm gonna give you guys all kinds of weird advice. A, the best way to sell is not to sell. Two, listen to the customer. Even if he talks complete gibberish, try to understand him.
Right.
And three, the final phase of any project and implementation is making yourself expendable. Once you deliver the car, give the client the keys and the spare keys, tell them how to drive and says, I'll be here if you need me. But never, ever do a vendor lock-in with a client. It will bite you.
Yes. That's been my hard and fast rule of thumb is you go into different places and you find out there's absolutely no documentation to go back in and figure out what somebody prior to you did. I will always fill out documentation and go and give it to the client. Here you go. Here's your documentation. If any, keep this in a safe folder, file, or whatever, somewhere. And if anything ever happens to me, I get hit by a bus or you don't want to use me anymore, I'm fine with that. Here's the information. You can give it to the next tech company and they can take over. I have no issues with that whatsoever.
And that's okay. I mean, one of the things that you need to realize is when you have to offer a support quote, there is a difference in the amount that the client wants to pay when he needs to work with you or when he wants to work with you. You might think that you have the other end of that stick. You know, I've got them by the scrotum, right. Latin thing, not swearing. I have them by the scrotum so I can charge whatever I want. Yes. Oh, but be sure they don't pee in your coffee when they bring it to your desk.
Right.
Because that is something you have to have a relationship based on trust. Let's say you have them by the scrotum and you have a 5-year support contract and something breaks and they have to call you and they call you at the last possible moment when, you know, the heat's on and everything's already broken and they have to get all the invoices out. And then at the final moment, we'll ask him. They're not going to smile when you're going to come through the door.
Right.
And you can do your work. And as soon as your work's done, they'll go like, goodbye. And when there is possibly the company has grown, there might be more business to be gained. But they're going to say like, yeah, no. We need a new exchange server and we're gonna buy it with somebody else. And that's a whole world of hurt. But they don't want to work with you anymore because they have to. And once you've set that relationship up where they want to work with you and you've gained their trust, they've been with you months ago. They've been calling you months ago saying like, oh, I think we need more email, you know.
Right.
And that's the difference.
Well, on the other side of that, I don't understand why technicians out there will work with people whom they don't like. I've never understood that.
Because it's not that the client needs you. It's because you will starve if you don't have the client. If you are in a government job and you are a government IT guy who is protected by law that he can actually drop 2 kids in the shredder before being penalized, yes. Then you can have a full 1980s, what's the guy called from that skit from Saturday Night Live? The IT guy who comes in and treats everybody like dirt.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I can't remember what the...
Yeah, those days are over.
Right.
Technology has become more and more and more important, but that attitude is over. And if you're self-employed and you have that attitude, well, good luck.
Yeah.
Because that's not going to help.
No, absolutely not. No, these are all good points. And I think this is going to be helpful to people that are, you know, looking to what it is they're good at and how to break into these, you know, business contracts and different things and, you know, what they want to do to set it up. Because if they are the technician, you know, maybe they can find a guy like yourself, they can come in, sell the services, and they can come behind and help support that.
That's a great thing. You have to say that what I do, I don't even sell the services. I design the services. But the great thing is, and that's the conflict of interest thing. If you have a client that needs more than you can deliver and you can get in an extra guy, you're getting the trust of the client because you're stating your limitations, but you say, I know what you need. This is not something I can deliver. Let's get in an external guy, work together towards a solution, and I'll build it for you. And because you are open enough to get in an external guy, you'll have the client's trust. And if the client still wants to work with you, that's great. And if the client doesn't want to work with you anymore, well, that's that.
Right. No,
at least you're in a situation where you can deliver what you can deliver and you don't have to oversell or overpromise yourself and disappoint the client.
Exactly. Yeah. What do they say? Oversell, I can't remember. Anyways.
Oversell, under deliver.
Yeah, there you go. You know, make it better for the client than it's going to be for yourself. And I think long-term, that's what's going to help, you know, each and every individual win in whatever type of business they're doing.
And there is something like, you know, Yoda doesn't run IT. It's not do or do not. There is no try. I have come to companies where I've said, you know, I will do my best. I will try. I will give you a best effort. And if that is good enough, that's your expectation. I will deliver on my best effort. But if I'm not 100% sure of I can do this, I will not promise it to the client.
Right. And that's a good point because a lot of times we think, oh yeah, I can do this. I can set that up and I'll make it work. And while that may be true, it's still, I would rather err on the side of, you know what? I'm not really sure. Let me look into this. And like you said, I'll give it my best shot.
Would you like airlines to hire pilots that way? Hey, John, You want to fly the one to Brussels? Yeah, sure. I'll give a crack. I don't want to be on that flight.
Right.
And if John says, well, I've never been to Brussels before, I'll try not to fly into anything, but give me Dave. Dave's been there before. You know, okay, take Dave with you. You'll give it a try. If it doesn't work, you can give it to Dave. Okay. I'll get on that flight.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Know your limitations. If you don't know how to do something, you know, say, I don't know how to do it. And a lot of times I think in this community too, is that you can always find somebody that's done it before and can help with those types of things.
The greatest, I always tell it to my clients, that goes both ways for consultancy. A, I have my network of people and I call them my A-team van. And I work with implementers. You know, I'm starting to network with implementers. So I've got guys who do system engineering. I've got guys who do web design. I've got guys who do communications. And I work with them and I get to know them. And I put them in my A-team van. And I said, like, if I come to a client and the client doesn't have a preference and he will ask me, you know, who do you think could do this? I'll, you know, open up the door to my A-team van and I'll get the mad guy or the engineering guy or the guy with good face or the Amy or the cigar smoking. No, I'm the cigar smoking guy. I'll get whatever comes out of my bus and I'll use it.
Right.
I'll present them to you and you can choose. I've worked with them before, so you can choose. I don't make any money off it. It's all you. I mean, I just do my hourly fee. That's something, you see, that's a conflict of interest. I have their trust. I supply a solution, but I don't charge on that solution because that's when I'm selling things and that's not what I do.
Right.
And the second thing I always tell my customers is the greatest sentence that I can tell you, which makes you money when I say it, is I once was at another customer and back there we did XXX. The experience that you have from different customers is exponential in value when you go to a certain customer. Having played around on other battlefields is the greatest gift that you can have and that you can bring to the table.
That's great advice. You've brought a new light to some things I think that a lot of technicians think about and kind of brought us your daily, you know, war on the battlefield, so to speak, in kind of what you do and your philosophies. And it's been a ton of good information that I think, you know, some people are probably listening to this a couple times ago. That makes sense. it might be deep, but it was definitely good information. Well,
yeah, it was.
I definitely had a blast with you on the show and I'm thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Where can people reach you and find out what you are up to?
Geekwise, nightwise.com, KNIGHTWISE.com, the podcast with hacks, tips and tweaks for cross-platform geeks. We do as many shows as we can, as often as we can. And, that's really important for us. I do an audio podcast, video podcast. I write articles and, so you can find me on the website. You can find me on Twitter or on Facebook. It's pretty easy. Twitter is nightwise.com/Twitter. Facebook is nightwise.com/Facebook. Google Plus is nightwise.com/Google+, one word. And my company name is Brain Rangers.
Very cool. I like the name. That's great. Brain Rangers.
Yeah. When the sheriff needs help, he calls the Rangers. So when the IT guys need help, we come in, we give them assistance, and we help them out. It's still their town. And when the situation is under control, we ride into the sunset. That's the philosophy.
Excellent. Well, again, appreciate you coming out and sharing with us today.
I would pimp the website, but it's one of the only things I do in Dutch. So it's brainrangers.be.
Okay. If you guys want to check it out, go ahead.
You can let Google Translate have a crack at it.
See if that works for you. No, very cool. But just appreciate you, sharing with us today. And you guys can find me over on the Google Plus at Jeffrey Hallish or Twitter at TechNutPC. And if you have any questions or would like to be a guest on this show, please email me at podnetsdaily@podnets.com. If you want to leave me a voicemail, call 1-888-697-0162. And I want to thank our sponsor, Instant House Call, for this episode of Podnuts Daily. And don't forget, if you guys need business paperwork to get started in your computer repair business, then check out the link for TechNibble Computer Business Kit over at podnuts.com. guys, do me a favor, leave us a rating and or review over on iTunes. That would help bring up our ranking and let more people know about us. You guys can also help support the Podnest Network. The next time you're shopping on Amazon, go to podnest.com/Amazon. And I want to thank everyone for listening and subscribing to the show. We'll see you next time on Podnuts Daily. My name is Jeff Halish. I am the host of Podnuts, where Chris Carruthers and myself take live calls on the air to answer questions or to get answers from other computer repair techs every Sunday at 4 p.m. Eastern. You can check it out over at podnuts.com/live. Music provided by Steve Cherubino at stevecherubino.com.